he's not telling you what.
Yours looks a little bit like mine.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Good morning for folks on the phone. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties in the room, just getting the projector and the things set up in the room. So if you can just hold tight, we'll get started in just a moment. Started. So welcome everyone. This is the 10th meeting of the Demand Management Working Group. I'm Stephanie Horry with the Consensus Building Institute, serving as your facilitator today. And so we have, just for folks in the room to know, we have two folks calling in, and we have Eddie Teasdale from Blue Rose and Scale Manini, who's going to be walking through one of the agenda items later today. And so for the benefit of folks on the phone, let's do our regular round robin of introductions. And so I introduce myself as Stephanie Horry. Let's go off to Justin.
Justin Denson, Deputy Director of Public Works Water Resources.
Bill Bohr.
Michael Ward, District 4 Groundwater Commission.
Al Crane, Groundwater Commission.
Ian Turnbull, the Bay Area.
Don Hamer, Groundwater Commission.
Thanks.
Steve Grunwald has just pulled up. So.
Oh, just pulled up.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah,
we'll be coming in soon. Well, the first cards are all pretty similar, so we won't be missing too much. Main thing, like for our today again, we're going to have open discussion. Hi, Steve. So Steve Grunwald has just joined us for folks online. And for the benefit of the folks who are just calling in, if folks can try to hold for one voice at a time, that's like actually my top one, pretty please. But if you can, try to state your name when you're speaking, just so that way folks on the line can follow the conversation. But usually we start off with just doing a recap from what happened in meeting 9. That was June 4th was our last meeting. And so we talked about kind of two main items. Primarily was the going through that straw proposal, like high level of those key elements that Justin walked through. And so the outcome of that conversation was folks identified two items to have Justin build out more of those details. And so that is the focus of today's conversation. The other one was the technical consultants had compiled some examples of guiding principles for a demand management program. We walked through those. No major red flags for folks. There are a couple of small revisions, clarification. We did those revisions, sent that out, distributed to this group. Group said, you know, no major red flags. So that is now posted to the website and available to folks. So. Moving, just kind of tracking where we are in this overall process. We're somewhere in between, like, you know, the exploring, packaging, and refining ideas. And so we're really starting to get some, stuff on paper there. And so we're really starting to craft those ideas where we are chugging along. As I mentioned today, the main part of today's conversation is going to be going over those specific demand management actions that Justin had really detailed out. So we'll give some time for Justin to walk us through that document and any sort of supporting materials. And then we're just really going to just open it up for discussion as much as we need to kind of understand that, and then thinking through next steps for other demand management actions. Then we have an update. Eddie's calling in to give us an update on that framework document that Davis Engineering, ERA, and LSCE has been working on for that technical report. And then we have an update of just some upcoming plans related to outreach and engagement. So those are going to be shorter agenda items, but we want to make sure we gave you some updates there. Any questions on the game plan for today?
My recollection that we were going to study grouping of polygons today.
That's come, you're going to see that today too. But it's referenced in here. So as a part of that, I'll be showing you how that looks like on the screen as well.
All right. So that first said one is the manage action.
So I think maybe the very first thing we should do is look, bring up the polygons grouping right now. So we can kind of look at that, and I'll give you how that's defined within this document so that you can reference it as we speak. I think that's probably one of the important first steps. So, right, ultimately, this occurs on a 5-year evolving basis so that it adapts to the conditions as they change as we move forward. As we put other management actions, other programs in place, projects in place that will actually change this, how this looks. And so because we need a little bit of flexibility built into this thing for the conditions as they come, this is what it would kind of look like right now, right? But on that 5-year revolving time frame, this grouping would look different. So we're calling this a combined safe field area. That's the term that we're using for this right here. And what that indicates is calculated safe fields of similar volume. All right.
That's in acre feet.
In acre feet. That's right.
And those are the three zones.
Those would be the three zones in red block. I'm using red block because it's an easy one to show, right? Right now. And this is the current, if we were to use the numbers today, this is the approximate average safe yield that would come out of those documents.
So those numbers represent what?
Okay. Those represent this calculation right here, which is, sorry, I just find this really quick.
Concerned about earlier. Acre feet per acre.
This is the polygons one we were just talking about.
I didn't run across. Well, okay, didn't run across this.
All right, in the grouping. So let's just say the one that has the 2.5 in it right now. You take the calculated safe yield of each of those individual polygons, right, and you add those all together and divide it by the number of polygons, and you get the average total safe yield within that grouping.
And then it's acre feet per acre.
Irrigated land
currently,
and that's the other thing in the flexibility. It also accounts for both shrinkage and increasing acreage of irrigated land, right? So it will, if it shrinks, it will increase that safe yield number. If it increases, it will decrease that safe yield number.
So that makes sense.
So that allows us to account for movement both in the volume of available water because of projects and movement in how much water is being pumped out of the ground due to agricultural whole acreage farmed.
And so that's not a misprint up there. That's 15 feet per acre.
Yes.
15 acres.
That is in an area right now where nothing is pumped, right? There is actually zero pumped groundwater within that area. And so until you actually start seed pumping, you're going to have very high numbers in those places. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Indeed. And so it's going to be unregulated. There's no reason to regulate a place that has zero pumping and healthy groundwater.
It'd be helpful to have, you know, some sort of overlay on this with respect to road locations.
A Google map.
Yeah. We can, in the end, we can definitely do that, but I can help you a little bit with that right now.
So the north border and the south border of 2.5.
Are
those the creeks? That Elder and Tom's, or what is
it? Should be Thomas on the south. So that's
this one. This is Thomas right here.
Yeah.
And so because if you look, there's the bend. This is Red Bluff right here, and that's that fork of cottonwood creek that comes down.
That's cottonwood.
That's the moment section.
Okay.
It's actually not cottonwood.
It's what creek is that right there? I'm spacing on this
No,
right now.
it's not Red Bank. No. Red Bank for Okeechobee.
No, it's yeah, I know.
That's
Why
okay.
am I
But if
spacing?
you know, having an Elder Creek
This is
legislation.
Bowman. This is Bowman something. And so you're talking Thomas Creek, Elder Creek, Bowman South Basin. All right. So this section right here is from the city of Red Bluff, which is right about here, right down to Thomas Creek. I-5 is right here. It actually is on the map. That's I-5 right there. This is the river.
So
Can you see that right now?
I looked at this before. Now I'm confused.
I-5 is
Where's the
right
river?
there. The river's right here.
Okay, that's right.
So this is that most of this property is between I-5 and the river, right? A little teeny bit of it comes on the other side of I-5, as you can see by these polygon movements, but generally speaking, that's where that is. This is the western stuff. So this includes like Rancho Cordova, which is about right there as a reference, and going all the way up. There's this right here is Highway 36. So I think this is Begum Creek. I think that's Begum.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I saw it actually.
Anyway, this is Highway 36 right here. And you can kind of get a sense Highway 36 kind of goes up here like that.
The
Maybe it's too early to discuss this, but those are large groups of polygons with a lot of variability. You go all the way from the river to Rancho Tejima in the 2.5 zone.
It'll go, no, you don't. You go all the way from west of I-5
Well, there,
to Rancho
it
Tejima.
goes to the river in the upper right-hand corner, correct?
Yes.
At Bend.
Oh, you're talking about right here?
Yeah, past the
Yes.
river. Not all that up there, yeah. I mean,
Yes, it does.
that's a lot of variability with respect to the status of the
It
ground.
is does not have a lot of variability in overall. If you actually look at the hydrographs, they're not that terribly different from each other. And the calculated sustainability is relatively so is similar. Now, let me just tell you this. This changes. Every 5 years, it will get fully recalculated, right? And those situations will change over time. And if we put projects into place and we put other management actions into place, it will create modifications of this. And this won't look like this in 5 years. It only looks like that right now because that's the shared attribute. But in the future, this could be one. And a big area. That is impossible to know until those things change. Does
So
that make
some of
sense?
those changes are I have more development being placed, therefore my safe yield per irrigated acre will go down.
Correct.
All right.
Or the opposite may exist as well, right? If we actually reduce the number of irrigated acres, that safe yield per irrigated acre will go up.
We had a significant discussion on per polygon. I guess it was the term we used back then was safe yield, if you
Yeah,
recall.
there was. That was the next thing. Go ahead. I was going to bring something
I
up.
think
But
it's the same thing.
I think we're on the same page.
So I realize this isn't what you want to spend the whole day on, but the verbiage that's contained in the enforcement
Use of
demand
those safe
management plan
terms. Yep.
hinges around this.
It does.
And we saw previously, we pointed out to you and Eddie, and just as an example, we pulled from the cuff a few polygons and looked at the irrigated acres. And the sustainable yield, I believe, is what it was called.
Safe yield.
Safe was the
Yeah.
safe yield per polygon
Yep.
that I think to the whole group did not make any sense.
We can get you a lot more discussion about the calculations of safe yield. The math itself that goes into them is correct. And I think what I, you know, as we came out of that meeting, what I told you, the mathematics based on the inputs is correct. There's not like a mathematical error.
So if I assume that the math is correct, it didn't pass the smell test, though, that would mean then the polygons maybe aren't drawn properly because.
That's some, by the way, the wonderful thing about this is that changes in time, right? And we get a new bite of this
Yeah, but
over and over and over
the
again.
starting point, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I think we were all in somewhat agreement that those numbers, that wasn't an acceptable starting point because I remember we did
Yeah,
stuff
I
on
mean,
the river and those
I
things.
guess
It was less than 2 acre feet.
the question I had, well, I think in some of them it was like 2 inches.
Yeah.
Of safe yield.
There's no.
No,
I mean, this is 3 feet. This is 2.5, and that's 15.
Right. My question was at the time, is there a problem with the model? And Eddie's response, I'll paraphrase, was that the closer you get to the river, the less accurate it is. So, and you're saying now there's no errors in math, well, then the error must lie in the model.
So here is just, I'm just going to say this flat out because it's imperative that we understand this. Sigma, if you are going to create anything that changes the amount of allowable pump water, requires you to set a sustainable yield. The only way to do that with current information is via modeling.
Then we need to look at the modeling.
That's something that we can work on over time, right? I'm giving you this as an example of what this would look like. However, that is a requirement of Sigma as a group. And so I don't think we can get away from using a calculated sustainable yield in order to create a demand management program, because then you fall afoul of the rule of Sigma.
Yeah.
And so, well, I agree with you that we can detail down modeling to the greatest extent possible. And by the way, the model is going to get redone for our 2027 annual update. So it's a great time to have those conversations. I'm giving you this to show you what that would look like in current terms.
When you say the model is getting updated, the actual model or the end?
Well, that's entirely up to us, right? We're going to do that. That's something that's going to have to be talked about. And if we want to change something that goes into the model or a parameter that goes into the model, those are discussions that are going to have to happen with the consultant. I'm going to be very, very open with you. I am not a modeler, but I don't create models and I don't modify models. And so that's something that will have to be worked on with the consultants during this process.
And from my perspective, I appreciate all of that, but it's not, in my mind, I'm going to struggle dealing with this when I'm in complete disagreement with what those numbers are. You see what I'm saying?
Because and the only thing that I can tell you is then you cannot create a demand management program. Because that would run afoul of the rules of Sigma, and then you create a significant issue, right? That means that you are restricting use based on something that isn't within the regulation, and that's going to be really hard.
Yeah, but the 3.0 covers a lot of territory. And that's the guys along the river, closer to the river, and sure as heck pump more than 3 acre feet and not affect it.
So
I'll go to the courthouse.
Here's just the thing I guess I will tell you about that is this only remember that this only comes into play when you hit the bottom. This calculation is about the bottom. So when you see what I'm talking about here, you will know what I mean. Everything else is about how much effort it takes to correct the issues and the cost associated with it. These numbers come into play in a big way when you remember how we talked about
it's the MT floor,
when you're below the MT for multiple seasons.
Or the MO for item one.
That is only about dollars to fix, right? And those numbers, that's a much smaller item. The big dog in this discussion that we're talking about right now is the floor, right? You get to that floor, and there is
a significant floor. You mean empty?
I mean empty. Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So, I'm with you, and we can put as much effort as we need to put into or want to put into in how we calculate the sustainable yield, right? Or safe yield per polygon is the correct term for how we're going to calculate it, then that's good. But ultimately, we are going to have a calculated sustainable yield in order to regulate off of. So,
yeah. What was the range of safe yield for that 2.5 area?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you remember what the range of possibility was?
I think the very highest one was right about 3, and the very lowest one was right about 2. That's sort of that range. This one right here, the very highest range was just under 4, and the very lowest range was just over 2, somewhere in that realm.
You know, I
Just for my point of clarification, you know, when it comes to actual management, and you know, there's a, well, some criticism of this approach is that, well, groundwater contours flow to the southeast. In other words, so what's happening in the 2.5 area is now also affecting the 3.0 area, and vice versa.
They do.
And so one thought was that, well, we really should have management zones that follow the contours, you know, to the river. As, and I'm just putting it out there. I don't know what the answer is.
Here's what I will tell you about that and why I think it's problematic. Okay. So first of all, yes, water generally flows like this. However, it's not linear, right? That movement of water is not like it just isn't, that's it, because that's not true, right? And it's affected by depressions and pumping, by how much precipitation you get in one given area versus another, all of these different factors go into that. How much surface area there is that gets covered in, say, surface water irrigation in one year over another affects those things locally. And so you have this mismatch of general movement of water, right, versus specific movement of water at any given time. If you just break this into, say, a bands, you know, like that, or whatever it might be, you end up creating a scenario by which you're probably not regulating the realistic conditions over that band. That's just my opinion. I think that it doesn't work quite right in, for really, really not right in this red blood cell basin. But I don't think it really works quite right in all of them. Obviously, we're not really talking about both because that's not ever going to be an issue for hopefully in my entire lifetime. But I, you know, I'm giving you red blood as an example of one that we are considered to be an overdraft and might fall to this regulatory requirement.
The only thing, other thing that I've always had a problem with is using this the creeks as the delineation point for our, all of our polygons. And I get it, you know, we're working within sub-basins.
Yeah.
And we divide and approach it up based on sub-basins. But, you know, my water would flow under my property, you know, it's straight to the going sub-basin. Yeah. You know, and so, and I am directly impacted by pumping in the Corning sub-basin. So I don't, and I don't know that that is even a factor with this approach.
Yeah, you would be resolving that too by dealing with what happens in Corning sub-basin below you, right? And I'm going to say this right now. Bulletin 118 that creates sub-basins is literally just,
no, I was.
It's not, it is not like some supremely scientific effort that created these things. This from right here, I'm gonna just gonna go ahead and say it. From right here to the bay is a giant pool of water. We all know this is true. Yes, there is some little barriers within it. Yes, there are little things, but that is one giant sloped pool of water that ultimately, if you pump way too much down by the bay, it would still affect us. Right? I mean, let's just be honest. That's a big, huge sediment trap in a bathtub. And there's water in it, right? So, but we have to manage per basin because that's a requirement of Sigma. And we have to set a sustainable yield because that's a requirement of Sigma. And so my opinion is that this helps you get rid of outliers, right? When you have these weird little bits of calculation thing in theory, because it averages it across a larger area. And also it takes into account generally similar conditions. This area has a generally similar condition to this area, right? I mean, this whole area has a general similar condition. This whole area has a generally similar condition. And this area has a generally similar condition if you look at the actual conditions within those areas. Yes, you're right. At the river, the well hydrology looks a little bit better than it does inland, right? Not everywhere, by the way, but in some of them. However, that being said, that is because you are grafting water off of the river. And I'm going to tell you right now, as I've told you a lot of times, there's soon to be regulation about that too that will control this. And we might as well start getting used to that fact because it's coming. So just, I I just want to caution you about getting too specific into stuff, because then what happens is you get an outlier and it negatively affects somebody terribly. You want to average this across a little bit more of a space.
Are all of those polygons represented by a monitoring well?
Yes.
Every one of them.
Right now, we have monitoring capability in each one of those.
That's not a worth more.
Yes. But, and so when it, it, when, if and when it comes to meeting minimum thresholds, will we be given the option of restrictions within that specific polygon, or is it going to be applied across the entire subgrouping?
The subgrouping. So when you have multiple wells show a condition over multiple years, you get the restriction within that area.
It just seems like to restrict someone that's up south of Red Bluff on the river where that oxbow is the same as you restrict someone out of branching to Hema or further. Just seems,
but when it
has to be a lot of pushback.
When it ends up occurring, just so you know, it may be entirely different. Because if this is what's calculated right now. And so in 5 years, I don't know. I can't even tell you what that's going to look like.
Yeah, it seems there's so many unknowns right now. We've got questions on the model, variability. And when, I mean, so we're building an entire program on, you know, bogus data, if I can be blunt.
That, I actually, and I'm going to say that I disagree with you on that, well, but that's okay.
It's questionable data. When we are, when we're questioning the validity of the model, to even determine what a safe yield is, and then we're building an entire program on it, that's on shaky ground. I get it. It's the best we've got right now, and we have to do something. I get that. But
and you're going to have to use a model because that's the data that you have.
And I understand that.
Yeah.
But I think it needs to be recognized that there's faults.
Over time, all of this information gets more and more and more detailed. And that is the reason why I want to build in these flexibilities that allow these areas to change, right? And also the calculation within them to change over time. Because that doesn't stick us to one thing forever, and then we have to go change regulation in order to fix it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it just seems to me that if there's going to be restrictions and punitive action, I think it needs to be more focused within the polygons where there's an issue. Instead of an entire 2.5 area, for example, if it's a problem far west that we're hitting MTs, then that's, I think, where we need to address that.
Well, as Mike openly stated, pumping here affects groundwater levels here.
Less so than the other way.
Pumps it, affects it here, right? Those things are all true. And so, like we said, this is out of a big basin of water, and you should be monitored. I'm going to caution you about this one more time.
Yeah.
To get away from an outlier creating a severely negative effect in one polygon, you should be broadening it as an average across multiple. Otherwise, you are going to have an issue where something strange happens within one polygon, right? And it creates a severe effect in within just that polygon. And that's going to be problematic. You know what I mean? So say, for example, there is a really rapid change for a very short duration during a really dry period within just one area, mm-hmm. right? That would then create a restriction within just that one area that is long-lived, right? Because you have to go back to a certain moniker in order to correct that problem. And correction takes longer than falls.
It all comes back to the polygons. Do not reflect what's going on in progression. So,
because you would have to have monitoring continuously to make that happen, which isn't possible. So,
but I'm just saying, so you're better off to broaden
because you're way better off.
They do not reflect what's going on under the ground. You never have.
It's only a general.
It's a convenience because of our monitoring at work.
Yeah, I at some point we're going to have to accept some amount of imperfection in all of this. It's not possible to go the other way. And so, by the way, I completely understand your concerns. I'm not trying to belittle that PDA. it is a valid concern. That's not what I mean.
I think what Steve's saying, there needs to be a reasonable amount of imperfection. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the old saying, you know, don't let the pursuit of perfection get in the way of doing a really good job.
That's right.
But we're not expecting perfection.
Yes.
I'm just expecting that it'll be something that's workable and.
And let's give us a
rational.
Let's give ourselves.
Because I know the conditions at Rancho Tehama. I hate to keep picking that, but that's just the geography. Yeah. It's just an area that's different from what's closer to the river. That's just a fact.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. It's significant. Yeah. So let's give it.
Okay.
There's 5 years of this thing going on, actually, and we have a lot of time to resolve this.
I don't want to take up a bunch of time on
that. Well, I'm with you that the output of the model is suspect to me, always has been. I'm with you. Just say right now, a lot of the calculations I think are suspect.
Yeah. And, you know, that's part of this whole thing about building time into this and building flexibility so that it gives us time to get better at that. Right. And I can't ever say it's going to be perfect because that's false. That'd be a complete lie. Get better at that. Over that.
One of the overriding factors that has to be fair to our constituents.
That's right. Yes.
Well, is it going to be fair if the sustainable yield is out west of I, on the west side of I-5 3 when on the somewhere closer to the river?
So you have
to be 4.
Yeah.
Is that going to be fair?
So, like I said before, you can do this and you can break it down into pieces, but you can also do it over the whole sub-basin. That's a very acceptable way to do it. I would argue that this is more fair than that. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
It's significantly more fair than that. And so at some point we're going to have to, you know, say, hey, we're going to use the data to the best that we can and be as reasonable as we can with what we have and continue down the road programmatically. And by the way, once again, I agree. Is someone down by the river going to say, dude, my well never drops? That's BS. Why would I be restricted? Probably.
So you're also saying when you put 2.5 and 3.0 as your safe yield, that we're generally exceeding safe yield in the robo sub-basin.
Generally what?
Exceeding safe. Well, we know that. We are in overdraft.
And but the problem, and again, I appreciate the complexity here and how difficult this is. The problem is that our data doesn't show that we're really in the northern part of the Red Bluff Basin. Doesn't show that we're in overdraft. You can run with that interpretation if you want. I mean, I'm not suggesting anyone's right or wrong here, but it almost, to me, a factor does, I think we do have to look at the hydrographs, bring those in consideration for those regions and the rate of decline in those regions. And, that, to me, as far as management actions go down the road.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the other argument that I would make to you. The reason why those areas don't have any issue is because they have little or no agricultural pumping.
I totally
agree. And therefore, a restriction within that area would have little or no effect because there isn't any agriculture going in those areas.
It'll have effect on the people that have ag there.
We're talking about 70, 100 acres, right? We're talking about, this is not some massive amount of overall acreage within those areas.
It's going to be helpful if you can get to us fairly soon, the Google overlay, so we get a
better. I will, yes. And you can also... obviously, you can do this today in the app that we have, but I can give you some screenshots of what that looks like too, right?
Okay.
And it shows you, it gives you how many irrigated acres within those areas, right? And it gives you the math on that safe yield, so you can look at what those mathematically look like. It's a huge, huge, awesome tool. But I can give you some snapshots of that too that will be helpful. All right, so if you guys are good, we'll move on to a discussion about programmatically what this looks like. So ultimately, originally, I was thinking, hey, we're going to do this as a triggered mechanism that increase costs over these trigger sections and will then in itself lead to a reduction in use of groundwater due to cost of use of that groundwater. But something that you, several of you said in the last meeting sort of struck with me, and that is that there should be a floor, right? And having a floor is probably important because it prevents the idea that if a crop value gets so high, eventually it doesn't matter how much the water costs. Does that make sense? And so that floor is number two. So number one is the original concept of, hey, we will, as you get farther and farther and farther away from your MO and closer and closer and closer to your MT, the cost of using that water within that area gets higher.
The measurable objective spring level, correct?
The measurable, it's the range of measurable objectives. So it's using the amplitude of measurable objective as the
Yeah.
idea
So if
that
you
you said.
explain, word for word, what is the step one paragraph saying?
Yeah. Will you pull a hydrograph? I'll come back up here. This is good for me. I sit in the office too much. All right. So, MO, right? In the first part of step one, this is your amplitude, right? Spring to fall amplitude, dot to dot. If greater than 20% of that amplitude is below your MO, right? Then it creates step one. If greater than 40% of that amplitude is below your MO, that creates step two. Right? And so what you're doing is as you get farther and farther and farther away from that, where you want to be going down, it steadily increases. It is independent of MT, which is the action in step two. Right? What we're hoping is that we never get there because this stuff, A, indicates to people that they need to start working on a problem within their area. Right. And B increases the cost of water so that more actions can be taken by the district and likely less overall pumping occurs because it's in everyone's best interest to save money.
So in this case, we probably have reached. No, don't go
Yeah,
back.
okay, sorry. I was going to grab my paper.
Okay, well,
Yeah.
we probably reached. We're at step four, maybe, on this particular hydrograph.
Are you talking about today?
Yes.
No,
No, maybe not.
it's probably not step four.
It's 50%.
Yeah, it's probably
Step two, three.
two-ish. Yeah, this is probably three right here.
And so, what would be the result? And so, we're at step two in this hydrograph, but this also it has to carry through multiple, launching wells. This condition.
That's right.
So.
If you look within the area, by the way, so this one is in that dark blue area. If you look through that whole dark blue area, vastly the hydrographs look like this. I mean, go look, you'll see. They're all pretty close.
That's in the 3.0 area or the
That is in the
2.5.
3.0 area.
But so what happens? What's your management action
If we achieve step two,
Yeah.
what would it be?
Yep. So in step two, there's going to be an assigned assumptive maximum use rate, right? Likely that's going to be somewhere in the 4 acre foot per acre range, right? All use either measured or assumptive, if you do choose not to meter, right, will be above that. And so crop type and acreage of crop type is the calculation for how you come up with that overall use in a area used by a singular owner. So let's just say Bill's place, right?
So it's
He's
not a
got
report. It's either what you assume or what's metered or what's.
either assumptive or metered. That's right. Yeah. You reported to me what you have. And that's the baseline for your charge that says, I have two in these connected APNs, I have 250 acres of hams, right? They use 3.7. And by the way, I'm just using numbers. So you're going to have that as your charge base. The assumptive maximum is 4. You use 3.7 right now, right? We get to step 2, and it'll be 20% off of 4. So that's 8 acre feet under. You will be, if you have Ammons, you will be slightly above. You will have some reduction requirement in there. So it'll be 5.5. Does that make some sense?
So I'll give you a scenario, and I've got meters, cumulative meters on a couple of my wells. I'm not using 4 acre feet.
Yep.
On my mature AM network. So I'm not using them.
Yep. That's why.
So it's to my disadvantage then to report what I'm actually using and then be decreased by 20%.
You will never know. It's in your best interest to report what you're using because the maximum 4.
But it looks like there's a reduction applied across either assumed or measured.
A reduction of the maximum, not of what you're using.
Okay. The maximum of the 2.
Yeah. So if it's 4 in this area, 4 is the maximum, and you currently use 3.7, you would not be that 0.3 above. You would not be restricted on it, right? So it's only that 0.5 below of the 0.8 total of 20%. So what this does is crops that use less water or agriculturalists that have ways to use less water, right, gain a positive benefit because of that. And so those that do the activities that are associated with being the most efficient, they meter, they have a lot of these sort of efficiency programs already in place, are going to reap maximum benefits within this program.
It would incentivize people to put a meter on if they think they can breathe better than what you're
doing. Yes. And then, by the way, that will also help us make our data better, our sustainable yields better over time.
I think when I first read this, you know, I think my criticism of it was had to do with the MOs.
Yeah.
Because we never adjusted the MO. And we adjusted the MTs per DWR concern.
Yep.
But the MOs were static. And so what, and I don't know that it figures into this at all, but you have your MOs, but now I got some really close MTs here.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be blowing through MOs most likely in
some spots.
Anyway, yeah. MTs.
Sure.
I don't know if that figures, if that's a concern of ours or not.
Let me just say this, because I you're right, right? And I still think that there was work to be done on MOs and MTs in the long run, right? I think that's going to have to happen over time. And we get every 5 years, we're going to get another bite at that apple, and we're going to be talking about it as we do these updates. And that's why this is also in that 5-year cycle, right? To sort of correlate to those changes. And as we work through this program over time, we have to have some way to make it flexible because we're not perfect. And as you get better data, more monitoring sites, all of these things, right, then you're going to be able to refine this more and more and more. This allows for a lot of refinement without changing the regulatory environment, which is the most difficult thing to do, right? Creating and changing regulatory environments are really complicated and time-consuming and hard. If you can create a regulatory environment that offers flexibility so that when you change the baselines, it automatically modifies the regulatory environment, you get your most bang for the buck, right? Because then we're not fighting over what the regulatory requirement is. All we're doing is discussing the data and how it should be applied. Does that make some sense? I think it's I really tried hard to craft this in a way. I mean, don't get me wrong, I poached other people's language too, but I really tried hard to craft this in a way that allows for that flexibility over time so that we can all sit in a room and say, okay, the MT in this place isn't working. We got there. It didn't cause any undesirable results. We want to change that. Or the MT in this location isn't working. We got a lot of undesirable results compared to where you ever got them. We want to change that. Or the MO turns out is way too close to the MT. We're way too low, and we even saw undesirable results when the MO happened, or the opposite, right? And so as we refine this over time, this gives that ultimate flexibility. All you're doing is modifying an MO. You're not modifying the regulatory environment.
Okay, so if we assume step two is triggered, the call would be, the requirement would be to reduce pumping by 20%.
Of the max number.
Or pay a fee.
So, correct. So the max number is crop-based, right?
Yes.
The max number is one number. So
it could be 4 acre feet.
It's probably going to be around 4 acre feet. So you're assuming the max pumping rate, right? So when we set up our fee schedule.
Okay. So. What are we using to assume a rate?
Probably UC Davis's crop data. So there's really, really good production average data.
So it is on crop? So if I have 60 acres of walnuts and 60 acres of prunes and 60 acres of...
Yes. Now I see what you're saying.
So where's that
fit? What's going to happen is we're going to say that... there is an assumed maximum pump rate that is somewhere within those crop categories, right? So say, for example, you know, there could be something that you do that uses greater than that maximum. And we're going to incentivize you not to do that from the very beginning. I don't know what that is right now. Off the top of my head, there's not very much of that kind of thing within Dan County. But let's say, for example, like you have groundwater flood irrigated alfalfa. I'm not even sure that there's much of that left in Dan County anymore. But we're going to incentivize you to get away from that because that's probably 5 to 6 acre feet a year. Right? And so the assumed maximum is going to be around 4-ish, right? So that fits the vast majority of all crop types within it and disincentivize certain activities that use way too much water. Parkland. You're going to pay more to do that. And then fees as we move forward will be based on those assumed categories. So if walnuts are assumed to be 3.9, that's how much, if you do not meter and report to me, you will be charged per acre.
There's a variable in there is age of the orchard. You know, most deciduous orchards are in that 3.5 to 4 acre feet range.
The vast majority.
Prunes or almonds or walnuts, they're all about that at maturity.
Okay.
But in their younger years, it's far less. Especially if you've got a micro sitting on top of that tree.
Well, I agree.
It's just a fraction.
Less than an acre foot.
Wait, yeah. Less than an acre.
That's why when you put in a new orchard, you should put in a meter in order so you're not pretty good charge.
Well, so you're saying that the model won't take a yield or change into it now.
That's right.
Unless we make it.
But you can make it so. You have the ability as the agriculturalist to choose that.
Every acre is going to be assumed 4 feet.
Or 3.7 if it's almonds or whatever, you know, 2.8 if it doesn't matter. Oh, if it's another olive crop, whatever.
Wait.
Those numbers exist.
So it's based on crop type.
Actual consumption. Actual assumed consumption is based.
I guess I'm at a loss there. So you have a. And I'm sorry, maybe I wasn't listening very well. So you have a 4.0 is your assumed across the board, even though you've got all these other crops.
Assume max.
So are you going to adjust, you know, in other words, are you going to hit everybody based on the assumed maximum for high crop types?
I'm just going to write something on the board and maybe this will help. So, walnuts, almonds, prunes, olives for oil, olives for table, et cetera, et cetera. These are all going to be assigned a use unless you report different. So we do not require that you meter and show it to us. You have the option of not doing something and you get the assumed volume, right? So say, for example, this is 3.8, this is 3.6, this is 3.8. 2.7, this is 2.8, this is 2.1, whatever that number is, right? There's going to be a ceiling in the assumed maximum. That is what's being used here as your maximum rate. There could be something above this, right? Like flood irrigated, flood
pasture.
Irrigated pasture may be above this, right? And if that's the case, you could potentially be penalized for doing that activity because it's above the assumed maximum. And the penalty is a fee, is your a fee increase, by the way. But it's just that we are saying that in step one, right, when there is say this is 4.0, right? In step one, you're taking that 10% off of this 4.0. And that's why this person gets penalized more than this person, this person, this person, this person. These will not be penalized. Does that make sense? So this, it's 10% off of this number.
So in essence, you know, we're not going to penalize anybody for all intents and purposes. I mean, you know, that flood irrigation pasture probably doesn't exist anymore.
It exists.
Okay. Oh, it exists. Yeah. It 100% does exist. It's just not in the same level. And some of them don't. Like flood irrigation alfalfa is pretty rare these days. And I'm not sure if there's any left in Tampa County. But it's one of the highest users. There might be a couple spots. Do you know of any?
Not in Tehama. I do in Clay.
Yeah, there are some in Clay.
Yeah.
Same.
Just as a side note, most of the flood irrigated pasture is using surface water.
So we won't have an issue at all,
right?
Because they're not groundwater. This is groundwater based irrigation, by the way. So all what we're really saying is when this gets reduced by 10%, it becomes 3.6, right?
Half.
This guy and this guy will either pay the fee or reduce their use. This guy is at it. He doesn't have to. And these two are below it. They don't have to.
Okay. So that's kind of, I was originally reading it that then the 2.8 would also be reduced by 10%.
Nope.
But we're just going to
one on this on the top. Yeah. Assume mass.
For all props, basically.
Yeah.
What do we call on that number?
Assume max.
Assume max. And when are we going to know what that number is?
It's going with fees, which is going to come fairly soon. I would assume that it's going to be right around 4, by the way.
That's fine.
And I've got to get that. I'm trying to get the UC Davis current numbers out.
So is that part of what's going to be included on what we're doing in this group?
It is going to be in the fees document.
And the fees are going to be a recommendation we come together with as part of this that we put as part of the package.
The fees are going to go through the commission. 100%. Whether it happens in the demand management program, I can't tell you that.
Okay. So either way, it's before it gets to the board.
100%.
And then just a out of the box question. These fees that are raised, where do they go?
Which ones? So the baseline fees, right? Those are for annual reports and updates.
No, that's I'm talking about the fees generated if you trigger
you mean the penalty.
Actually, penalties.
I voted the fee,
but penalty.
Yeah. The fee is something that
okay. Is
all going to
okay, be penalty.
Yes. I actually wrote it in here.
Where do they go?
It goes second paragraph on first page.
Didn't see that.
Management actions, that one.
Number
one.
Yep.
Well, I got a question. If 4.0 is our assumed maximum, orchard crops. Putting irrigated pasture somewhere above that. Is that right?
It depends on what I don't know yet because I don't have the final numbers from the current UC Davis counts to put in front of me right now. I'm just assuming that irrigated pasture is probably at or above 4. Flood irrigated alfalfa would probably be the number one. That's usually around 5-ish.
You know,
there's a couple.
How much that affects
it all depends on the
field. What's that?
It all depends on the field.
And that's why you get the opportunity to report your actuals. So you could say, hey, I don't fall in that category. I do something different.
I had a field alfalfa. We can let the water run there all summer long. and it still would have got me in a field.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking. Yeah, just ugh.
And then there's others. There's flood irrigated projects with recapture and recirc. Yeah. Sumps that are very efficient.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
okay. So the other side of it. How do we regulate any of this?
In what way?
In the fact that, okay, we're reduced it to 3.6. How do we look at an orchard and know whether they reduce down from 3.8 to 3.6?
You get the fee unless you do something otherwise, which is either A, farm less acreage, right? B, meter and show that you're doing something different. Or C, there are a couple of very specific things that you could do that would mathematically change where you fall within this thing. And I put those in some of that demand when we started talking about demand management, the incentive-based stuff. Like there's three total items that you can do that do not require, that have a very, very linear reduction and do not require, would not require metering the root. There's three items there. Now I got to go back and look. Might have only did two. But those items would just come off of your assumed pumping values if you did them.
Are we talking about things like in lieu recharge? Or
increase of surface water is one of those. So you could just say, hey, I'm now using 3 acre foot of surface water and only 1 acre foot of groundwater.
Or a bank of water.
And you can report to me almost all surface water is somehow managed. I know that we're going to have to talk about that in the long run with you guys. But the vast majority of it, you could literally just send me your feeder bill. Right, and then that will just come right off of your total, of your assumed, if you don't meter your groundwater.
This is an annual assessment.
Annual assessment every year.
So that's delayed by a year.
Exactly, it happens the year after the year it happened. Yeah.
I've got a problem with the whole definition of. You know, when we went through setting the MOs and setting the MTs and everything, the idea was, in my understanding, that the MO would be, say, spring levels, and that the fluctuation spring to fall was, as long as you stayed above the MT, we're okay. And now we're, you know, kind of
penalizing the MO.
You're not really penalizing the MO. I know that it is based off of distance from the MO, but the goal, obviously, even written within our plans, literally says to be above the MO. Yeah. And so if we want to change and redo MO talk, let's do that. I'm into that, and that's okay. And that's another reason why we have this 5 years to work through some of those other things before any of this happens, right? We're building all of these things so we can get programs in place to put water back in the ground and decrease that and increase that sustainable yield calculation, right? We're doing things that might change some of the other baseline governments that affects this and get it right. Adding more monitoring points, giving ourselves some time to get those with a baseline so that we see it. All of those things will affect the actual outcome when this goes into play, right? So that's what this is about. That's what that time is about.
And another way that could be written would be the MO is being used, and it appears there's a penalty off the MO. But if you objected to using the MO, it could be a different formula from distance from MT, maybe. In other words, you could get the same number and just not use that word MO.
But here's what I want to caution you with. No, it absolutely could be flopped where you say it's distance above MT, right? That's a very similar type of calculation.
Yeah, I realize. I'm just saying that you could get to the same thing not using that word MO.
You absolutely could.
Whatever.
Well, just recalling how that stuff was set, nobody really understood, you know, where it was going to go and what the ramifications were. And like MOs, I think people really, my recollection, they weren't.
They were like,
whatever. Yeah. It's okay to not.
Yeah.
not well, make your MO as long as you don't.
MOs have been described by DWR and some of the other sub-basins and GSAs on lengthy discussions on setting of the MOs was literally stated as a goal.
Right, correct.
And don't take that to mean if your water level's here and your MO's below that, your goal is to drop the MO. But over the term of Sigma, the MO needs to be a goal with no ramifications, negativity if you're below it, above it, or otherwise. That's setting a baseline for what you're shooting for. That's why the operational flexibility, we made the case, and my objection on getting those two closest, when you get your MO real close to your MT, you have no operational flexibility to react and respond and take action. So you have to
maintain it. I don't think anybody here is going to argue that. I think you're right.
You know, said something different about, I forget how you described the MO, but it was different.
The MO, it as it's described in our plan, says it's our goal to be above that. Right? To remain above.
Which is more aggressive than what DWR says.
So, and ultimately speaking, you're right. We should set our goals to be reasonable. And I'm with you on that. And maybe we do need to relook at MOs and what they are if we're going down this route.
Yeah,
I'm totally into it. Let's do it.
I just think, yeah. Ball measurements, you're never going to be above the MO because in many of the polygons, you've got 30, 35 feet of fluctuation spring to fall.
Well, I think if you go look at the actual hydrographs, all of the healthy aquifer basins, 100% of the time, they are above the MO.
That's it. Thank you.
All of the healthy basins or gorge polygons, 100% of the time, the water level is above the MO.
And you don't.
I think if you actually look at the hydrographs, you will see that that is true.
But you don't include Revlop and Horny into that definition of healthy basin.
Well, polygons. Yeah. Polygons. So look at that one that's at 15. Go look at it. It's essentially above the MO.
Yeah.
Well, you would never meet this. Yeah.
So I just, been down there for 45 years.
Yeah.
I've always had significant fluctuations, spring to fall, always.
Yep.
As long as I've been there. 30 feet plus, and now all of a sudden we're saying
that's why it's not saying you can't have fluctuation. It can be huge. It's not controlling that. It's just saying if a certain amount of that fluctuation is below your goal, right, then you have some work to do to get back to your goal. And yes,
it infers that the fall levels should be above that MO goal, and that's where I've got a problem. What you just
not said, above
first
or not at, above, okay, at, not too far below.
Well, at,
yeah, not above,
that
not
I've got too a far
below. Yeah, not too far below. I'm going to tell you right now, all of the programs that have this, that have language about restriction in them, have below MO as first step restriction.
Again, when the MOs were set, this was not
correct. That's right. And we should probably have that talk, and we got lots of time to do it, and we should.
I'm just saying. Because that was specifically brought up on several occasions as to what the MO really was.
Yeah.
And now we're changing it.
I have not argued with you at all.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I understand exactly what you're
saying. It would be nice to see, and anyone can do the math, I think, but to see where we are in 5 years. Yeah. We know we have base decline on all these, laundry wells.
Yeah.
And that assumes a lot. I mean, it assumes it's going to show us what's the importance of voluntary measures.
Yeah.
What is it really our goal here within the short time period? And what do we have to achieve that time period? But when you do the math, you say, okay, we have these rates of decline. We're going to blow through these MOs on what percentage of these wells? And what percentage of these wells will we be exceeding or at the MT? That's an easy thing to do.
80%.
80%.
Plus.
You've already
at current rate of decline.
You've already seen that?
I'm guessing. 80% plus.
You're saying at the current rate.
At the current rate of decline. Yeah. If you did that for 5 years, massive amounts will be under the 80. But ultimately, of course, we are hoping to do things that help correct that.
The other thing, too, that concerns me is you have the safe yield. At these polys, these areas. But, as you have more and more expansion, that hits those same fields. It drives those numbers down. And then I'm kind of wondering, I mean, when you're looking at mansion action number two, how does that impact what I have to accomplish at that point? How is everyone hurt by allowing that expansion to continue? I think that's really, for me, that's probably the most important conversation, not only in this group, but as a county, we need to talk about this.
Yeah, I'll just put it out there this way. Ultimately, those who would be affected by a restriction in expansion or an increase in expansion are the ones who are going to have to give their input as to whether or not expansion or not expansion is an issue.
Well, I think what's really nice about what the numbers you just showed, though, is that it's a heads up for everybody. Right now, we're in overdraft. This is what sustainable looks like. And will only get worse with continued expansion.
That is true.
Well, I'm hoping that discourages development. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Further development.
So,
sorry.
You got it. General housekeeping.
Yes.
We appreciate it if we would get consistent on what we're calling things, like measurable threshold versus minimum threshold. You know, there needs to be, at the very least, a definition sheet.
Yep.
You look at the hydrographs, it's minimum threshold. You know, and yeah, we're calling it measurable threshold here. It just creates confusion, my opinion. Also, management action number two, item six. I don't see why you're putting the contiguous assessor parcel numbers under one ownership. If you're all in the sustainable yield grouping, shouldn't matter whether the parcels are contiguous or not, as long as they're all in that, because it's looking at the same thing.
So here,
let me finish real quick.
Yeah.
And then there needs to be some kind of allocation trading, again, within the sustainable yield area. You have somebody, and I can think of two situations where in one case, I have 40 acres of prunes. There's no well on that property. It's not owned by the adjacent well landowner, but his well is being used to irrigate it. He's leased the ground for that orchard. You know, there's stuff like that going on, probably more than people think. But in addition,
what's that? There's a bunch.
Yeah, I know.
You're talking about sharing?
It's not share well. Who I'm talking about is Forth and Clark, new people that Camden is doing the orchard, right? There's no well on that property. They're owned by different people.
You know what I'm going to say, right?
What?
So in Tama County, if you don't own the adjacent parcel, you can't put the water on it at all.
Well, it's going on, and you're going to end up having people with pitchforks out.
It still is the law.
I know.
I mean, that's the law.
There's a lot of stupid laws and ordinances that seem to aim the county because of ignorance of what the conditions are in the county.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm not like the changer of the county's ordinances.
Sure,
right? That's not...
The point I'm trying to make is that if it's within a sustainable yield area and you want to let your 20 acres go fallow and I want to pay you whatever to be able to use your allocation, should be able to do it. Why not? If it's in the same sustainable yield area, I can see not outside of that.
What? I will tell you this, and you guys can, if you guys want to do that, it's okay. You want to say, it's okay, I'm with you. I will just tell you the consequences of that is that there will be many, many, many people who sell out their farming operations in order to get the money for the water that's underneath their ground.
Maybe.
Doesn't matter.
I'm just telling you that. That is the direct consequence of that.
The issue I have with that is that you look at those big broad areas, you know, the 2.5, and that basically, if I were to sell my water right, but I'm not even saying, I can't, I don't think I can.
No, no you're the year. Allocation for the year.
Sell my allocation. What I'm doing is I'm creating a localized impact somewhere else. Because that, in theory, based on what you said, that could go anywhere within that.
Within the sustainable yield
area. Okay. So, you know, what in effect it does. So if someone were to do that where I live, I'm impacted in a worse way.
How could I've already?
How could that be mitigated?
You don't mitigate that. I don't see mitigation.
So you're talking about water transfer on paper.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, maybe it has to do with adjacent APNs and permissive if you're touching.
You're saying in the
I'm saying
there is a sustainable.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying because we looked at earlier, from the river to the foothills is a huge swath in the 2.5. And so a guy that just doesn't want to farm anymore that closer to the river, he can keep coming back to that, but he could transfer his water right.
It's water allocation.
Well, he can transfer his allocation and allow continued overdraft.
Would you propose that?
That's a problem.
Say it again.
It would permit continued increased overdraft in areas that are already in overdraft, and it would affect locals surrounding that area. If that's
possible,
I have to think
it through. But it wouldn't increase overdraft because you're reducing in the same sustainable yield, whatever you want to call it. Let's use
the same. Can I comment on what you're saying?
Sure.
So how about, I'm just trying to not mediate, but the broker in between, how about within a polygon?
I was going to say the same thing.
That would make it, that localized impact would still a significant area.
I still have, it's still there. But yes, I understand.
I don't think it necessarily would be.
I think that's way more water.
And we can continue this divide polygon.
All right. One voice. One voice at a time, please. All right. But I am going to actually interject because we are over time on this topic, though we can adjust times there. But just want to, like, it sounds like there's a conversation about allocation creating, whether or not that's within the polygon, how that might work. So that's a conversation flagging. Let's continue working on it. There's also a conversation about, are we going to actually do this, talk about this as distance above the measurable objective, or is it going to be distance below the measurable objective, or the distance above the minimum threshold? There's the question about whether or not to approach it differently from there. There's a couple of specific requests that you identified, Ian. Like, let's come up with a definition sheet. Let's have some Google map overlays.
Let's use the same terminology.
Consistency, yes, with the terminology and the
definition.
It gets
the same thing.
Yes.
So I wanted to turn to Justin, based off the conversation, what's next for this document?
Do you guys want to see what a write-up? Do you guys want to see what a write-up looks like for a water creating program within Polygon?
I don't. Not yet. I want to finish this.
I think it needs to be part of what we're doing, but I don't necessarily care if we see it right now.
I actually entirely agree with you. If you're going to do it, that's a great way to manage it because it doesn't affect such these large areas.
Right? How about folks send an email, send in Justin your suggestion, things for him to be considering, and that can be a conversation we can kick off at the next meeting or very soon thereafter. But like Michael was saying, what's next for this particular document with these two managed actions?
Did we cover this management action number two? Well, not all three. To me, this is a step, a level above what we've been talking about.
So are we done with number one?
Well, I hope so.
I just want to make sure we're done with number one.
For right now.
Okay. Mainly, like, do you understand that? Are there major red flags? And if there are major red flags, ideally, you want to get them voiced out here and then send in thoughts or suggestions to Justin afterwards.
So to me, there's major red flags in that until I can see actual numbers to put to it to pass the smell test.
What numbers are you referring to?
The assumed maximum allocated fee structure proposal, the assumed yield list. And I need to look at a package with all the hydrographs grouped by the safe yield area so that I could look at them relative to today's conditions, which we're all familiar with, see how far down this list would be triggered, how far we are from being triggered, to see if it even makes sense. That's the practical side of it. This is theoretical on what the plan looks like, but a large amount. But what this says hinges on passing the smell test on how far down this trail are we right now, and is that reasonable?
A couple of specific examples would be nice as well.
So I was referring to, I think the safe field bug, the whole thing has to be assessed on where we'd be right now, which would be more than just a couple.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, but...
But that might pose other questions on that variability that's quite disconcerting or might be reassuring.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a little confused about what you want. You want to see every hydrograph within the average out area currently for say field. You want to look at
I want to see whatever the tools that are used to implement these rules. Which I'm assuming is all the hydrographs, because you have to have a certain amount of them below a certain level, where we are relatively speaking in that Red Bluff city field that's called Red Bluff, not subbasin, but that Red Bluff 1 at 2.5. Where do we stand today relative to that?
So you want to see a 2.5. So we can bring forward a data package for the 2.5. The reason why I'm saying this is obviously these are big data information lives. I want to make sure.
No, I understand, but they're critical. I want it by. Can you go back to your map? I don't want a generic. Let's say that this was the move ahead. That area that's outlined in 2.5 is all one safe management area.
It is.
Where are we today based in that area? Yeah. Or it could be another one. I just
need yeah.
That way you
so can. So we want an example of one of the entire areas with those data inputs so you can see what they look like.
And it probably makes sense to do the Red Bluff because there's the most diversity in that one on certain ground surface elevation and groundwater levels. That would address maybe some of Steve's Indians.
And that's not to say that rejected, you know, I mean,
and you're already
asking. That would probably be the next step.
And I think
what it looks like first.
All good, by the way. I just want to reiterate to you that when this actually goes into effect, it will be different.
I realize that. That's always, you're saying that's always going to happen every 5 years. So I realize that. But right now, if we saw that and it said you could take either extreme that we're, you know, never ever going to trigger it, then some people might be concerned, or if we're already in this disaster where we've got major, you know, if until we get to that, it's going to be a hard time for me, and I would assume for others to accept what we've got here. Where are we right now?
We need a new application.
What it would look like.
Yeah.
I think you probably have an
opinion. What it would look like today.
Where we are, you might have a different, I'd have a different, whatever, right? So might be all the same.
I'm wrapping this conversation up, so just indicated that. Well, I appreciate that. For now, we're going to put a pause on this conversation. Justin said that to do the exercise that how to talk about let's pull together some of the numbers and hydrographs in this theoretical 2.5 management area. Now I need the definition list.
Right.
And so Justin said that he's aiming for is probably going to be the August timeframe to pull all that together.
Solely because our July meeting is fairly soon. And it's a fair amount of data. I want to make sure that you get to see it in a real way. So if I can do it before that, I'll let you guys know. But I think it's probably going to be that August one.
And we could pull up.
You can do it now.
Start doing it.
Yeah. You can do it individually right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just wouldn't give you the triggers because of the rules for multiples and all that. You can see what it would look like not given
one. One or two of them.
Okay. I'm going to put that away.
Anyway.
All right, so I'm going to push us forward to the next agenda item. Eddie, you've been waiting patiently. Eddie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
3.0 also.
All right, Eddie, I'm turning it over to you. So, are you planning on sharing the screen, or were you just planning on talking?
No. Let me pull up my screen here. Let me know when you see it.
Yeah. Moving on to the.
You guys see my screen?
Yeah.
There we go. Yes. Yes, it's a little bit small, but if you can zoom in a little bit, that might help.
Let me see what I can do.
Right now we're seeing Justin's management actions document.
Oh, give me 2 seconds then. Let me, what do you see now?
Still seeing
management action number 2.
All right, give me a sec here. Now, what do you see?
Same thing, Eddie.
Really? All right. All right. Just, I'll get it figured out. Give me a sec here.
You want me to pull up a document and.
What do you see now?
There we go.
There we go.
Now we're seeing the title page for the technical report.
Okay, great. So, yeah, I'm just going to give you a quick overview on this. This was just finished last night. So we sent it over to Justin last night, so he's taking a look at it. And just to kind of refresh everyone's memory, this is the groundwater demand management framework document that primarily has been developed by ERA and DE. So it's kind of been prepared for, you know, not only the Tehama County folks, but also the Corning Subbasin, and then also the Corning Subbasin GSA. And the concept here was to develop this framework document, which would then specifically for the Corning Subbasin, help lay out a plan on how they want to spend. It's essentially a task 2.4. There's about 250,000 in there. 2.5 to develop a demand management program. So that's the concept. And so it's about a 50-page document. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. At some point, this will be shared with you. But I just thought I'd kind of cover maybe the major items. And so really there's an executive summary.
Would you be able to zoom in on the people projects, the little smaller screen?
Just page itself.
Like just a single page.
Maximize page.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Better.
You guys, is that better?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay. So really executive summary. This is really just the background. And then towards the end of that, we talk about next steps and the costs to implement those next steps. And I'll touch on that in a second. It sort of sets the stage for what groundwater demand management looks like. In this case, it's Tehama County and a bit of Glenn County. And then we talk a little bit about baseline subbasin conditions and data. So we dive into land use, agriculture, the demographics, the water budget. And then we set the stage for the major elements of what our demand management program would look like. So we got the program admin and rules, an economic analysis. Again, this is just a framework document, but we dive into what would be needed to look at that. We talk about a funding strategy, an implementation timeline, you know, how is this going to be measured? You know, the measurements, we've heard that conversation come up a couple of times this morning. And then also sort of developing an accounting system. And, you know, there's different levels of that. You know, you heard Justin talk about there's going to be some assumptive usage unless you're willing to kind of present your own data sets. So that's kind of capitalized or included in this document. This is a little bit different. Again, this is just the framework document, but we talk about sort of incentive driven components. So, you know, can we develop incentive for conservation? There's folks out there that don't really think conservation makes much of a difference, but we've included it in this framework document. And then we've given examples of what those incentive-driven programs might look like. So in this example, it's a fallowing bank that's kind of been set up, and you know what the purpose, what the feasibility would look like. So encouraging folks maybe to wait a year before they replant it. That's the concept there. And then we get into sort of incentive-driven components, and this is kind of tied in what Justin was talking about: extraction or acre-based fees. You know, the feasibility of it, that the implementation of it. And that's, again, these are all sort of incentive driven. And then we get into the mandatory components, which is really tied to allocations. So we've kept it pretty general in that we talked about a subbasin allocation, a landowner allocation, how that would be implemented. So I think it kind of complements some of the messaging that I think that Justin's presented today, but more of in a general framework. And then we do touch on, land and well restrictions. Obviously, I think we all agree we don't want to go down this path, but we thought it was important to include that. And then we've talked about, and this example is sort of next steps. And so I'll come back to this here in a second. And then we've included some straw proposals. And I think, maybe the biggest difference is on these examples with the straw proposals. And I think this will happen, regardless of what direction, is the outreach that needs to happen kind of, in front of all this. There needs to be a lot of outreach done to the public, which I think we all can agree is important. I think something I wanted to touch on specific to developments proposals, or I guess program development steps. So I'm just going to go to that section here. Just give me 2 seconds here. And then I'll pause for kind of questions. So what we've done here, and I do need to zoom out a little bit. We've kind of laid out like, okay, here's the framework document. How do we move forward? And so the idea is what, and this is what sort of ERA and D have done in other sub basins is to kind of develop a work plan. And I think you've seen pieces of that today from Justin. And so the concept here is, define demand management pathways. We've talked about that a little bit, just making sure everybody agrees on what those are. There has to be a cost and a technical analysis. And again, I think that's been touched on today. Obviously, engagement is really important, just making sure that there's a process in place to do engagement and outreach. And then the administration, how do we keep track of all this? This is going to be, a heavy lift, I think, probably for the county. And it's probably going to require, Justin to have, one or two dedicated people to kind of manage this. Timeline on how that would be rolled out. We're not trying to fix the problem today. We've got a bit of time, but we want to make sure that that's kind of defined. And then all of these bullets up here would be included in this work plan that would get developed. And so it would sort of lay out a framework and a work plan to move this forward. So that's sort of the demand management program next steps. And then also I mentioned these straw proposals. So there's some example proposals on what that might look like. So just bear with me here. So here's an example. You need education and outreach. I think we all kind of agreed on that. This example is developing a fallow bank. So, other options where folks might be willing not to plant, but obviously get compensated for it. And then the third bullet is then you start developing sort of an allocation framework. So it's sort of staged a little bit. That's one example. Another example, again, starting with the education and outreach, we've got the fallow bank option with incentives to implement that. And then we get into this tiered system. So this is again similar to kind of what Justin was showing, where you might have a sort of a baseline fee based on different areas, and then you kind of have a higher fee as those areas maybe head in a un or managed maybe in an unsustainable way, and then there's penalties associated with that. And then the third option is sort of very similar, but then we get into sort of developing an allocation system. So this is kind of all been packaged up in the TM. Again, Justin just got it last night, so he'll take a look at it. And I think there's ways to integrate some of the concept Justin's presented to this document. And then once sort of Justin gives us the heads up or the thumbs up, I think this will be shared with you all, as well as the CSAB, as well as with the Corning Subbasin GSA folks, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. So I think, Steph, with that, I'll kind of pause and just see if there's any sort of general questions. Unfortunately, ERA and DE are not on the call. Yeah, that's kind of what's been developed as part of this framework document. So are there any questions or thoughts or?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. First of all, Dave, Justin, if you had any, because I know you also just got this, so you're probably just a couple hours.
Yeah.
This
I mean, I'll only admit that I have essentially not read this. I looked through what's in it through, the upfront stuff, but I don't, details I don't know yet. So I don't even know what questions I would ask as of
So
yet.
certainly the overall next steps are going to be for the staff to have an opportunity to review, provide feedback, and so that way, but the intent is to do that as quickly as possible such that we can get that revised draft over to you all to review and have time to review and provide feedback. But Justin, was there anything else that? or any clarifying questions that you have before?
I don't think specifically.
I mean, currently the intent was for this group to at least get a teeter and a sense of like what to expect that's coming your way. So you're not getting a 200-page thing, and you're not getting a 10-page thing. You're getting somewhere in between. But any clarifying questions, though, for Eddie?
You teased me.
All right. We have
All right. He's injected and he'll die.
But anything
else? How soon will the breaking group? How far
out? I would think fairly soon.
Do you think, because we pulled the group and said, because the original regular time, the like fourth Wednesday of July, we're not available. And so you pulled and identified July 16th and August 6th as alternative meeting dates. Do you think July 16th would be a
100%.
All right.
So and ultimately, like you know, we're going to send it out to you beforehand so that you can all look at it before the meeting. We can talk about it in depth at that time.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
So the goal is do the staff internal review and get a draft out to you so that way we can delve into this in deeper discussion at the July 15th meeting.
So it's set for July 16th now?
Based off the conversation,
July 16th. And I really hope that we can do both the July and August one and then have the August one set another one for August and maybe a couple in September. Right, so we can keep driving this thing.
Straight down the track.
I had a question, Bill. I mean, this may not be the venue for this, but I think we get to this point where we're starting to talk about dollars per acre as a base fee and a budget, I think, of what I heard $2.6 million annual for implementation and just basic administrative. So my first thought was, you know, we've been running all this grant money for years, and we've kind of almost developed a program to match the money we have available. Now, and it's gotten brass tacks, and we've got to start paying for it. Can we?
How much can we let down?
What can we cut? Can we doge ourselves on this thing and get that number lower? Because it was 20 something bucks an acre, I think, is what I heard.
I think I'm down to around 8 bucks an acre foot for the base.
I'm talking about acre or acre foot.
Acre foot.
It's still $25 an acre for most people, and that's in my opinion a large number.
Yes.
And so I'm just wondering is there opportunity or is there anybody that's looking at these costs now?
Yes. We have created. With the consultants, as you see, it's bad. I created some baseline stuff, and now I am whittling down those baseline items. The initial number was 15 plus. I'm down at about 8-ish right now. Bucks an acre foot.
How's the Corning's Basin GSA able to do it for what, 14 an acre?
It's because of they're charging people who don't use water. They're not extractors.
It's not everybody.
Yeah, they're not charging extractors.
And we're talking about only charging per acre foot of pumped groundwater.
Okay. And that's why it looks that way. Right. So that puts more of the cost burden on those who do extract water and takes it away from those who do not.
Well, the 14, whatever it ended up being, was for groundwater users. Dry land was like 95 cents.
I don't remember. Yeah. Yeah. There was one of numbers about that. Yeah.
It does compensate for that, their charge structure.
Yes. But that is why that's that way, because they do it extract some of the money from non pumpers.
I think what Ian's point is that's insignificant amount they extract from non pumpers because it's a minute fraction.
Not only that, there's a cost associated with having your property and Sigma. And the whole idea was, okay, you know, for like the dry land guys, you're not extracting, but you still have to comply with Sigma. So that base, there is a base cost in there just because you own
the property. So here's one thing that I will say is ultimately what's going to happen is if you have a well, you are going to be get some fee if you have a well at all. And there actually aren't that many properties within the basin that don't have wells.
You're talking domestic or
any well. Any well, there will be some fee associated with that. And ultimately, when I start getting those when I get those numbers of wells, because we'll have sort of a double structure, right? You own a well, there's a fee for that well, like a well head fee. You use water, there's a fee for that water use. And so when I get these numbers, they will help me refine these numbers down. Does that make sense? I'm not quite there with total numbers of wells to divide it across in that section. So I can only give you where this number stands right now. But when this comes into play, it will reduce this.
I would just encourage you to look at what's going on in Glenn County portion. If the fees are way out of line with what's going on down there, there's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Vine is the basic center.
Okay. Right. Yep. The fees are starting to get set, most definitely. And they range massively, by the way. I mean, really, really massively.
They do, but yeah. I'm just saying, you know, like, for example, with Corning, it's the same sub-basin.
Yep.
And they can do it for X.
Oh, I'm going to tell you that Glenn County is right now talking about additional fees.
Yeah.
Beyond what they have right now. So the more is going to come.
And it might be spread over more irrigated acres.
I'm not sure that's true.
I don't either. I'm just saying it's one variable that I
know. They're even comparing it to like Palouse surface. You know, one of the complaints with the Corning GSA, Corning surface GSA, was that it's so small, the fees had to be higher than what they thought it should be. So,
Justin,
do
you know
that
these are meeting in July? I know the regular next meeting was supposed to be early August.
But yeah, we're talking about a potential having a special meeting based on how fast we get this done and reviewed it all together in order to get it.
For the CSAP.
For CSAP, yeah.
I want to go back to your areas, your safe field areas.
Yeah.
If that's okay. But sure. Have we looked into the legal aspects of, you know, applying management actions, you know, so you group these areas together, so you're going to treat them quotably together.
This one actually, what you might think, actually is heavily supported by law, and that is breaking things into similar conditions in order to charge them similar fees. So, but just so you're aware, I have specialized counsel writing the contract right now, and they're also going to get to review the outcomes of these with these notations for us and provide us input as to what could be the risks or pitfalls of the item that we put in place. So we're going to get that independent legal review.
Who is it?
BKS.
Where are they at?
They are based out of Sacramento, but they have an office in Reading too.
Well,
this is their jam, like actually what they do for a living.
I guess the question is, I'm just wondering, what I'm curious to find out is whether the safe management areas is the way to go for this, or it can be done in other ways.
It can, outside of management areas, yeah.
So that kind of aligns with our next topic, was just kind of thinking through what are the next kind of steps and the timeline for the next several months. And so, looking at the summer, certainly with several things that we've been working on, you know, building out these specific demand management actions, getting the technical report finalized, as we just talked about, bringing in an external consultant to do some of the legal review. So are we still on track? And as we discussed at the last meeting, one of our big milestones that we're aiming for is to get this draft demand management program proposal in front of the commission in September. And so, as Justin alluded to get to that milestone, we're expecting to have more meetings in July and August, so that way we can have those discussions. But also, as well, in fall, that's when we'll have more of that legal review is going to be completed. We'll have that revised and near final proposal such that we hit that due date, January 2026, that proposal gets put in front of the board for review and approval. Concurrently through all of this process, again, as we talked about, we just talked about seeing that. We also talked about how we're tracking what's going on in the Corning GSA, their sub-basin committee. And throughout all of this, there is going to be outreach engagement. So we wanted to take a pause just to let folks know what that's, what's expected there. And I'm going to focus just on what is being funded via the LCEs, that round two grants that we have. And so the anticipated activities related to this is informational items. And so this could include things like fact sheets, content for the website, newsletters, as well as providing opportunities for written and verbal feedbacks. And so that can include having a survey, public meetings or webinars. So those are all things that we're anticipating doing under the round two grant. First round, we're aiming to do it in this phase where we're having like enough substance and ideas to share with folks, let them get them aware of what's going on, get their feedback of what's being considered, doing that in the summer. So doing a first round of outreach and engagement in the summer. And then in the later part of fall, when we're kind of near the final stage, doing a second round of that. And so want to let folks know that that's what's being planned. This is, we timed some of this around the fact that a lot of substantive content around meta management is going to be of great interest to the public. So that's kind of informs some of the timing, but this will likely be combined with other Sigma issues. So you do this update on the projects that are going on, updates on dry well mitigation, et cetera. So lots of other things to be combined along with this, and being fully acknowledging that Justin's out there doing several, I think you just presented at the UC Extension meeting. And so there's also additional outreach and engagement happening elsewhere, but wanted to highlight what's being done under the round two grant. So questions to this group though was just like, as we're moving forward, just want to see if you had any thoughts on what are the key issues that you want to hear back from the public. So what do you want to learn from the public? And then conversely, what do you want the public to know? What's the key messaging that you want to make sure that the public is aware of? So wanted to pause if folks had any questions or thoughts on issues and messaging.
I think it's going to be absolutely critical that you come up with specific examples, specific areas, and you show numbers and how you're arriving at those numbers. And having that out there, clear, concise way, I mean, that's what people are going to be looking at. Maybe not that of the homeowner, but agriculturalists.
The people who care.
Yeah. And it's got to be clear. And based on the actual hydrographs in the particular area, few different areas. I think that's...
I'm with you. And in fact, it's ultimately my goal, sometime a little bit later in this process, to put together sort of how, what I'm going to show, right? Here's what this looks like, and get your input on whether or not it's understandable before we do it. Because that's a lot easier for you to see than me on the other side of the picture. You know what I mean? I'm saying... Okay, here's the information I need to get out there, but you might say, hey, it's easier if you explain it or something like this. So I would be listening to your assistance with that. Because, I mean, ultimately, I'm a desk jockey that's putting this stuff together, and, I don't always see it that same way. So I need some help with that. Hopefully.
Okay, I think, people just want to know how people are engaged. All they want to know is, how am I going to be impacted?
How much is it going to cost me?
Yeah.
Yep. And what is it going to do? What is it going to take for me to comply?
And why?
Yeah.
That's not going to do.
Yep.
Anything else? All right. We'll be moving forward on that.
I don't speak forever.
All right. So as we kind of based off this conversation, we asked you to hold July 15th and August 6th. And so it's not an and or it's not an or, it's an and. So July 16th is when we aim to have a deeper discussion on that draft technical report from the technical consultants. And August 6th, Justin, is that when we can possibly expect to have some of the
we'll have a redo on some of the more details for
this portion of the demand management set up. And at the same time I'm doing that, by the way, I'm going to start writing up the more detailed incentivized portion. So maybe we can start talking about that too in August 6th. So those details.
Justin, I had a question about you mentioned that for the fees and actions, the management actions draft, we want to have a conversation with this group first. Is this okay to be shared in its, you know, well watermarked draft disclaimer form to the website, or do you want an opportunity to make adjustments before we post it?
I have no problem with sharing working stuff so that people can see what it is, but ultimately, if you guys have any issues with that, let me know. Yeah, okay. I mean, obviously, this kind of will be, this is the working document right now. We're not there yet, but here's where we are right now.
Okay.
I think it's better if we let it
know. Eddie's info there, there's quite a bit of information on there. Is that something we have access to?
We're going to get you a copy of that shortly. I just need to talk to one. I haven't even read it yet. Well, so I want to make sure there's not something funky in it that's like, wait a minute, this isn't right. And talk to that one time and then send it all out. Okay.
Look at that. You got 8 minutes back to your whole day. All right. Thanks, Eddie, for calling, and thanks, folks, for joining us. But so the next meeting is going to be July 16th. There is not going to be a meeting on whatever that 4th of July was going to be. But the next two meetings for this working group will be July 16th and August 6th. All right. Thank you, everyone, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.